Donald Trump makes a comeback.
I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president.
Kamala Harris makes a speech her supporters didn't want to hear.
I know many people feel like we are entering a dark time. But for the benefit of us all, I hope that is not the case.
And the world reacts to Trump's election to a second term.
Sviatoslav Slav expects changes, saying he believes at least something will change with Trump as a president.
Today is Thursday, November 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris delivered a concession speech to the nation on Wednesday after a whirlwind campaign that ultimately failed to stop Republican Donald Trump's return to the White House. Harris told a crowd at Howard University that she knows people are feeling down, but ultimately she pressed for optimism and faith in the future.
I know many people feel like we are entering a dark time. But for the benefit of us all, I hope that is not the case. But here's the thing, America, if it is, let us fill the sky with the light of a brilliant, brilliant billion of stars. The light of optimism, of faith, of truth, and service. And may that work guide us, even in the face of setbacks, toward the extraordinary promise of the United States of America. I thank you all. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. I thank you all.
Harris rose to the top of the Democratic ticket in July after President Joe Biden stepped aside and brought newfound enthusiasm and cash to the Democratic campaign, but she struggled to overcome voters' concerns about the economy and immigration. She was handed a resounding loss on Tuesday, with Trump winning a greater share of votes across most of the country compared with his performance in 2020, and Democrats failing to secure key battleground states that decide elections.
With more on Kamala Harris's campaign and concession, I am joined by VOA's Patsy Wittakuswara. She was at the Harris Watch Party Tuesday night, and she was there for her speech on Wednesday.
So Vice President Kamala Harris delivered her concession speech today, and what has the reaction been so far to the words that she had to say to the nation?
Well, I was there listening to her speech delivered at Howard University, the same venue as her election night watch party last night. And people were tearing up. I mean, I saw a lot of people hugging, a lot of people with tears in their eyes and just a feeling of despair and a somber mood, but also some, I don't know, some elements of hopefulness perhaps, because as she delivered her speech, you can see that people were still cheering, people were holding hands, people were hugging. I think the message really landed, which is that she encouraged her voters to be the bright light, to be the stars, even if we are entering dark times.
And last night, obviously, both campaigns were entering election day with enthusiasm, and supporters of Harris at Howard University were cheering and excited. How did that mood change as the night went on? I mean, people were saying that it could take a week to know the results, yet we knew very quickly. So what was the mood like as the night went on at Harris headquarters?
You can definitely feel it turn. You know, there was music, there was laughter, there was a lot of dancing early on in the afternoon and into the early evening. But I would say around about 9 or 10 p.m., people got more quiet. The mood got more somber. You can feel people's anxiety. And in fact, this kind of reminds me a little bit of what happened in 2016 during Hillary Clinton's election night watch party. I was there at Javits Center in New York City. at that time, the mood change was even quicker. I mean, the people started crying around me around 7 p.m. So there's a little bit of that kind of change in mood. But then, you know, by midnight, Cedric Richmond, the campaign co-chair, came out and said, "We're not going to know about the results tonight. Tomorrow's another day. The vice president will not speak tonight and will address her supporters on Wednesday."
There was obviously a call that she made to Trump to concede the election, or as she put it, she conceded the election but did not concede the fight, as she put it in her concession speech. But what was that call like to Trump to concede the election?
Her campaign described it as Vice President Harris calling President-elect Donald Trump, discussing about the importance of peaceful transfer of power and being a president for all Americans. And then the Trump campaign responded in kind of like a similar, you know, unity tone, saying that both leaders agree that it's important to unite the country. And also Trump acknowledged the fact that Harris was somebody who was professional and full of tenacity as a candidate.
Has President Joe Biden reached out to the Trump campaign or Trump himself yet?
The White House put out a statement today saying that President Biden called both President-elect Trump and Vice President Harris. Biden invited Trump to the White House soon, he said, and he's set to address the nation on Thursday.
Patsy Wittakusar, thank you very much for your updates today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The voting is done. Most of the counting is as well. With Donald Trump's victory in the election, VOA's Tina Trin explores how his past policies and current positions offer insight into the upcoming presidency.
78-year-old Donald J. Trump, the former U.S. president, will once again occupy the White House as president of the United States. Like Grover Cleveland in the late 1800s, Trump will serve two non-consecutive terms in office as the 45th and the 47th U.S. president. To understand how a second Trump presidency could play out, it helps to look back at his first term in office and recent claims on the campaign trail. Immigration is a major theme for Trump, and his restrictive policies are tied to his nationalist America First views. Back in 2017, 7 days after he was sworn in, Trump imposed a 90-day travel ban barring citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries from entering the U.S.
I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here.
During this year's presidential campaign, Trump spoke forcefully about what he calls a migrant invasion, making border security a key electoral issue. He told supporters in North Carolina what he would say to Mexico's new president.
I'm going to inform her on day one or sooner that if they don't stop this onslaught of criminals and drugs coming into our country, I'm going to immediately impose a 25% tariff on everything they send in to the United States of America.
During his presidency, Trump imposed tariffs on Chinese imports and seems unlikely to change tactics this time around.
They've really been hurting us. It's so ridiculous. They end up closing, everybody loses their job. Then they make it in their country, and then they send it back to us with no tax, no nothing. And we lose the company, we lose the jobs, we lose sort of everything, and it's so stupid.
Trump pulled the U.S. out of the 2015 Paris Agreement, an international treaty tackling climate change, global warming, and greenhouse gas emissions.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Trump says his energy policy will focus on increased domestic oil production and a rollback of environmental regulations.
We're going to, first day, first hour, we can do many things in the first, but first, we're going to drill, baby, drill.
In his second term as president, Trump is promising a more protectionist and isolationist approach than the last 4 years of President Joe Biden. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
During the campaign, Kamala Harris and the Democrats painted Trump as a fascist and a threat to democracy, saying his message is mired in negativity, anger, and darkness. Has America embraced and approved of that message? Steve spoke with Ishan Tharoor, who writes with Worldview Newsletter for The Washington Post.
So paraphrasing some of what you wrote in your most recent column, you were quoting some of your colleagues at the Post, and you say that for much of the campaign, Trump offered a message of xenophobia, misogyny, racism, cruelty, darkness, and hate. And if he wins, it's because enough of the nation embraces that message too. Do you still feel that way now that he's won?
Yes, Trump campaigned and has campaigned. If you put this in global terms, campaigned as a far-right nationalist. And the rhetoric of his speeches, the nature of the kind of political pitch he was making to the Republican base, the kind of apocalyptic rhetoric surrounding migrants, the poisoning of the blood of the nation, all fits into a pretty dark theme that activated clearly a number of American voters and really struck a striking contrast with the rhetoric and posture of his opponents and Kamala Harris and the Democrats.
Now, how do we know that it's that rhetoric that struck a chord and not, say, the economy, which a lot of pundits say was really one of the deciding factors?
I mean, I think that's a fair point. And I think the important thing to recognize when we look at a number of elections that have happened in recent years, not just in the United States, but elsewhere across, I've had other far-right nationalists succeed, is that spotlighting this rhetoric, attacking your opponents for their extremism, in the case of certain European elections, specifically attacking your opponents for their quote-unquote neo-fascist identities and their kind of links to really dark chapters of those countries' histories, was not a successful political tactic, because in many instances, these far-right parties, these nationalists, these populists, are activating a public that is dissatisfied with the status quo, that is disenchanted with the pitch of the liberal establishment. And that clearly was the case in the American election as well. This was a change election, an election where Republicans have apparently won the popular vote for the first time in a couple of decades, and where many voters who may have voted Democratic just didn't bother to turn out, largely because they were disaffected as well.
Were they disaffected with the Democratic Party? Were they disaffected with Kamala Harris?
It seems that for Vice President Harris, given that she didn't have much of a runway in her campaign, she represented the Biden-Harris administration. She represented a pretty unpopular administration, given what we saw in polls earlier this year, especially in the summer. President Biden was sinking and had no chance of defeating Trump. Harris made up ground, but she ran a campaign that was associated in the eyes of many Americans with the status quo. And this is a status quo, whether it's really supported by facts or not, that's perceived to be responsible for rising prices, a stagnating economy, a sense of drift, a sense of social malaise. And Trump, especially to a certain demographics, especially to certain younger men, really galvanized the kind of change vote, even though he's already been in power himself.
So it's odd for a white baby boomer male to epitomize the change vote, no?
What is interesting about this election is that there did seem to be a certain kind of class realignment here. You know, the Republicans are the traditional party of big business, the party of slashing taxes, the party of not exactly the working man. But in this election, the exit polls show a story where Americans earning above $100,000 voted for Kamala Harris, and those earning less voted by a particularly considerable margin for Trump. The non-college educated voted for Trump. So there is a kind of curious class dynamic here that tracks onto also people's sense of despair about their futures, their concerns about being able to afford houses, their concerns about being able to afford basic things. And while there may not be a tangible Trump plan to fix any of this, he rode that dissatisfaction.
Ishan Tharoor writes the Worldview newsletter for the Washington Post. Ishan, we've got to leave it here for today, but thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis with us. Elsewhere in the world, Arab leaders quickly congratulated Trump on his U.S. presidential election victory. Some are hopeful he could bring an end to conflict raging in the Middle East, while others are looking for a stronger stance against Iran. Dale Gavlak in Amman has that story.
Saudi Arabia's King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the United Arab Emirates leaders, and Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad all congratulated Donald Trump on his first presidential win, saying strengthening strategic partnerships is important. Daniel Khaliat Khati, president of the Research Center for Cooperation and Peace Building in Beirut, tells VOA that during the election, Trump emphasized personal ties with such leaders compared to what she called Biden's more transactional approach. Khati said Arab leaders want Trump to end war in Gaza and Lebanon.
One of his main campaign promises was to end the war in Gaza, but end it how? Will it end with a Palestinian state? We don't know. The thing that is worrying is Netanyahu attacking Iran. This will be major. Handling Iran will not be easy for Trump.
Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has reiterated that his country would not consider improving ties with Israel unless the Gaza war ended and a Palestinian state is established. Wealthy Gulf states have bolstered ties with Iran and given the Islamic Republic assurances that they won't allow Israel to use their airspace to facilitate attacks on Iran. In its response to the elections, Iran played down the result, saying it was ready for confrontation with Israel. Jordan's King Abdullah, Egypt's Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Najib Makati, involved in trying to negotiate an end to the raging conflicts, also congratulated Trump. Analyst Osama al-Sharif in Amman says he believes Trump will pressure Netanyahu to end the conflicts before the presidential inauguration next year.
He will tell Netanyahu boldly to wrap things up before the 20th of January, because those two wars, especially Gaza, have become so toxic and they have become part of the Biden stigma, which eventually also was inflicted on Harris. Trump doesn't need to start his first day at the office with more news of children getting killed and hospitals being blown up.
Al-Sharif tells VOA that Iran will be a big challenge for Trump, who he says is an isolationist who wants to extract America from any conflict. He suggests Trump may tighten the sanctions regime on Iran.
More sanctions. He might be able to communicate with Tehran through Putin, who is now a very close ally of the Iranians. That remains to be seen.
Al-Sharif, however, expressed concern that Trump might recognize Israel's annexation of most of the West Bank under Israel's current hard-right government, which he says would complicate things dramatically for both the Palestinians and Jordan. Dale Gavlak, VOA News, Amman, Jordan.
Another hotspot in the world with a definite stake in American foreign policy is Ukraine. So it's not surprising that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was among the first world leaders to congratulate Trump on his election victory. However, some citizens of Kyiv fear that Trump may force an end to their war against Russia's invasion with a settlement that will favor Moscow. For VOA, Anna Chernikova reports from Kyiv.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was among the first European leaders to congratulate Donald Trump on what he called his impressive election victory, saying he appreciates Trump's commitment to the peace through strength approach in global affairs. Zelensky stated this is the principle that can practically bring just peace in Ukraine. On the streets of Kyiv, people share mixed reactions to Trump's return to the White House. Some, like Mikhailo, hesitate.
I think that we could expect anything from him. He could continue the policy of the Biden administration, and he could be worse or be better to allow Ukraine, for example, to shoot on the territory of Russia or something like this.
Svyatoslav expects changes, saying he believes at least something will change with Trump as a president, while Harris, he believes, would have just continued Biden's policy. Olha is scared, like many others, that Trump will fulfill his campaign promise to reduce aid for Ukraine. She is worried about Ukraine's future, considering it very uncertain. Miroslava recalled Trump's promise to end the Russia-Ukraine war in 24 hours after his victory. She says she is looking forward to seeing this promise fulfilled. Overall, Ukrainians wonder what the first steps of the new U.S. administration toward Russia and Ukraine are going to be. The biggest fear in Kyiv is to end up in a settlement that will force Ukraine to capitulate on the battlefield and give up its European and NATO future under Russia's unacceptable demands. On the other hand, for many in Ukraine, Donald Trump is a hope for more decisive actions towards the end of the war. Ukrainians remember him as the first U.S. president to provide lethal weapons to Ukraine that enabled the country's defense at the beginning of the Russian full-scale invasion. In the meantime, there is anticipation about what Trump will do before his inauguration in January, as he said he would try to end the Russia-Ukraine war before that. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world.
An Israeli airstrike has killed at least 30 people in central Lebanon as the war between Israel and Hezbollah continues with no signs of easing. The airstrike hit a town just north of the port city of Sidon, an area that has not been regularly targeted by Israeli military operations. The intended target was not immediately known.
British health officials say they've identified four cases of the new, more infectious version of Mpox that first emerged in Congo, marking the first time the variant has caused a cluster of illnesses outside of Africa. Scientists, though, say the risk to the public remains low. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strope.
And finally today, along with the re-election of Trump, another huge story in the world is the firing of Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. What will it mean for Israel and its multiple wars? For some insight, I spoke with our correspondent in Jerusalem, Linda Gradstein.
Well, first of all, the resignation hasn't yet taken effect. It's 48 hours from the time it's announced. And there have been protests both last night and tonight of thousands of people going into the streets all over Israel and protesting against that decision. And I think there is concern that Netanyahu is going to move ahead on a few different fronts. First of all, a law that would give the ultra-Orthodox a permanent exemption from service, which is one of the things that Gallant opposed. The other thing is some of the plans by the more extreme members of the cabinet, Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, for expanding Jewish settlements and things like that could perhaps now go through as well.
And what do we know about Israel Katz?
He is very smart. He was Israel's foreign minister. He has no military experience at all. And, you know, this he's taking over as defense minister at a time when Israel is fighting on, it depends how you count them, but certainly fighting in Gaza, fighting in Lebanon, fighting Iran, fighting the Houthis. And he comes in with no military experience and a deep, deep loyalty to Netanyahu.
And Linda, my final question, while I've got you on the phone, it'd be silly not to ask, changing gears completely, what's the reaction been in Israel to the American election?
Well, you know, Israel was a bit of an anomaly abroad in that most Israelis, according to polls taken before the election, something like two-thirds of Israelis wanted Trump to win. Trump is seen as having done a lot for Israel in his first term. He moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He recognized Israel's control over the Golan Heights. He said that Jewish settlements in the West Bank are legal. So he's seen as being somebody who likes Israel, respects Israel. So the basic reaction is quite pleased. People are very pleased by it. And Netanyahu actually called Trump to congratulate him. He was one of the first world leaders to do so and put out a very supportive statement congratulating him on, you know, the greatest comeback in history.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there for today. I'm talking with VOA's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. Linda, thanks for your reporting.
Sure. Thank you, Steve.
And that'll wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strobe. Thanks for listening.